we try to keep, and it's funny, the most impactful things in the planet are the most simple. And people with their brain cells all climbing to come up to a decision usually end up overanalyzing, and then they do an analysis and a spreadsheet, and they oversmart the whole damn thing. And that's not what we do. We look, okay, what needs to happen? The simple, that lacks any confusion, is impossible to misunderstand. That's what impact is.
Oh, such a good question.
Well, where do you come up with these questions? That's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. It's Ben Baker, and you guys are a great audience. Thank you for coming back every single week. Thank you for subscribing. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for being an amazing part of my audience. This week, we have a repeat offender. In the 260 episodes that I've done, this is the first time I've actually brought somebody back, and it's well worth it. I've got Steve Sims back, the real Wizard of Oz. He was on episode 216. We're not going to talk about what we talked about before. If you want to find out about Steve, you got to listen to the previous episode. But Steve, welcome to the show, and let's talk about small-scale, large-impact events.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Yeah. Well, I love watching you. I love you know, it's serious. I am a voyeur at heart. You and I were just talking off air about the crazy things that you do, and people just follow you and just say, you know what? Steve's doing something crazy. I got to be part of this. And quite honestly, if I could get across the border and get back easily into Canada without a 14-day quarantine right now, I'd be ponying up the money and coming to your events. But you know what? We'll deal with that when the time comes. You know, you and I are definitely going to raise a glass together, and we're going to have a lot of fun. But for people who don't know about Steve, as I said, listen to episode 216. He's got an amazing backstory, an incredible book called Blue Fishing, and, you know, really takes the time to create these amazing small scale but large impact events. And I wanted to talk to you about it. What was the impetus in the first place? Why go this direction? Like, what was the crazy thought that brought you there?
Oh, my God. All right. So I would love to tell you that I sat down and I planned and I did this and I did. But you've known me long enough to know that I've never overthought anything in my life. As entrepreneurs, we work based on aggravation. Something bothers us. We go and find a way to fix it. So two things bothered me in July about 2.5 years ago, in June, 2.5 years ago. The first thing that bothered me is I'd just come off of an event that was full of a bunch of speakers that were promised to deliver. I knew a few of them. Most of the others I didn't know, but they were pretty lame. And the ones that were up there seemed to be off kilt and just telling me how wonderful they were. So I ended up leaving off of this event going, and I remember the guy next to me was clapping like crazy because like any good presenter, you can get people clapping, but you can't get them activated. And I want to be activated. I want to walk out the back door and go, I need to be doing that and I need to be doing it now. So this guy was clapping like a demented sea lion. And once he'd calmed down, I said to him, oh, you enjoyed that, didn't you? And he was like, yeah, that was great, Steve. And I said, so what are you going to action from it? And he was like, what? Now, bearing in mind, the footprints hadn't got cold from the speaker getting off the stage. The guy couldn't give me one actionable step he was going to be used. And I went home going, how many times do we go to events because XYZ is going to be there? You know, Bob's going to be here. Billy's going to be here. Susan's going. And we go based on the speakers and we're told what conference center it's in, what time it starts, what time it finishes. There's a reception. We've got all of the details. And I thought to myself, that's all the details apart from the one thing that I want. I want to know what the answer is. I want to know what the impact is. I want to know what the solution is to problems I have. And none of those were being laid out on this massive itinerary. So that was bothering me, one thing. And then the other thing that was bothering me is, and I got to ask you first off, do you have kids?
I do.
Are any of them girls?
No, I don't have any girls.
All right. God bless you.
I sleep better at night. You know, having teenagers, I probably sleep far better at night having boys than girls. But that's a different conversation altogether.
So I have a teenage girl. Well, I had a teenage daughter. And, you know, she's obviously grown up now. And, of course, everyone out there is now going, oh, you poor fella. They get to a stage in life where they hate you more than anything in the planet. You know, you are the butt and the aim of every sly remark and sneer and eye roll. And this was bothering the hell out of me. I used to be really tight with my daughter, and now she'd been replaced by Satan himself. And it was coming up to my birthday. And the one thing that I'll never tolerate is two-face. You know, you got something to say about me, say it to my face. Otherwise, shut up, okay? But I did not want my daughter in July, and this was in June, to come up to me a month later and have to give me a birthday card going, love you, Dad, when all she really wanted to say is, please fall over and rot in the ground.
And please pass over the credit card while you're doing it, would you please?
Yeah. So I didn't want to put her in that position. And so that was literally the aggravated nut. That was the oyster. That was the moment of going, God, I don't want her to be doing that on my birthday. I can't be here. I can't be in this house on my birthday. And God, I'm aggravated with my daughter. I'm still aggravated from this event. And they both then combined. And I literally just went on Facebook, and I suggest you all do this. You all think you've got credibility. You all think you've got some kind of impact you're creating. Find out how many people are willing to commit to you. Okay? That's the real. It's always the kind of like, well, look, you may have 4 million followers, but how many paychecks have you got? How many actual people pay to play? Because, hey, everyone's in until they got to pay. Okay? So I thought to myself, I'm going to test my credibility. I literally posted on Facebook, these dates in July, which was my birthday, I'm going to be somewhere in Southern California for 2 days. I'm going to teach you everything you need to know, and I'm going to answer your problems. $2,000. Pay here. And I put a PayPal link in there. There was no picture. I wish I...
No muss, no fuss, no fancy website, no nothing.
No, I wish I had screenshot that bad copy, and it was just atrocious. And a few days went by, and, you know, I didn't have the alerts on my PayPal. And then someone messaged me, you know, what information do we get? And I looked on the PayPal, and I had like about 9 people had signed up.
Wow.
And I was like, well, that's weird. So then I phoned up one of my mates. And you talk to your mates differently, don't you? So I phoned up my mate, and I went, I just saw you pay me $2,000 for these 2 days. And I said to him, what's your problem? Meaning, are you mad? You know, it was a test. I didn't know anyone was going to do this. You know, it was just testing to see if I had the credibility to make people pay based on ridiculously little information. Now, I said to him, what's your problem? And it was meant as a little bit of sarcasm. But, you know, he didn't take it that way. He literally turned around. He said, Steve, glad you asked that question. I'm having trouble with this. And he started telling me what his problem was.
Wow.
So I went, okay, I've got you. I'll be back. And I went to the next person. I said, hey, Ben, thank you very much for registering. It's an honor. You know very little information. You've taken a risk on me. Let me ask you, though, what currently is your problem? We framed the question a little bit. And I went through all 8 people. And, of course, these started telling their friends, hey, he's asking me what my problem is. Now, here's the dumb thing. Armed with the knowledge of what the problem is, aren't I now better educated to get the right instructors to be in the room?
Absolutely.
That's what I did. I went to my Rolodex and I got a handful of people, and a friend of mine had a house down in Carlsbad. And so I said, oh, we're going to do it. And here was the daft thing. The guy said, look, you know, I've got this house, but I don't want you telling the address. I don't want you announcing it. So I said, okay. So I thought, I'm going to get a hotel that's local. So I said, hey, this is the host hotel. Stay at that hotel or anywhere close to it, because a week prior to the event, I'll tell you where you're actually going to be. Okay. But I do not release it. And someone turned around and they went, oh, this is so secretive. It's like a speakeasy.
Boom. There goes the name.
And I was like, you are so right. A speakeasy, you know nothing what's going on inside unless you're inside, but you know that's where all the fun's happening. So that was it. That's what gave birth to the speakeasy. We literally launched it 2.5 years ago. And the first one, I think we had like 20-something people. And then we did another one and we ended up getting up to like 35 and then 42. And then we did another one and we got 60. And we went, hang on a minute. You can't be intimate with 60 people. So we capped it at 40 max. And everyone that signs up now, we got a little bit better. We pick a city, we pick a host hotel, and we pick the dates. So when they sign up, we say, great, thank you very much for signing up. This is going to be the host hotel. We've got a group rate. Stay there or somewhere close to there. We'll reveal where we're going to be closer to the time. By the way, let me ask you, what's your problem? And so we do that. And then what we'll do quite often is call them. And we'll go, hey, Ben, you know, I got the details on your problem. You know, why is that a problem? And we'll kind of get a bit more of a fathom. We've had a few people go, oh, well, you know, I sell insurance and I want to sell to your crowd. Or, you know, I want to get into this group because I think my product could be good for this group to actually sell. And then we turn around and go, do you know, I don't have the solution for you at the moment. So I'm going to send you your money back immediately and we'll stay in touch. And quite honestly, we don't. But so we cherry pick. Now, I used to be a doorman of a nightclub. And let's keep it primitive. If you got a couple of guys coming up to the door and they'd already had a few beers in them, if you let them through the door, you knew what they were going to continue to do. You also knew that if there was any trouble inside, it would probably be those guys that kicked it off.
And not only that, it's on your head.
Bingo. So understanding that primitive psychology, I always used to look at the people coming through the front door and I used to think to myself, if I can control who goes in my house, I remove 99.9% of my problem. And that's what I do with the speakeasy. I not only very heavily focus, which I don't think a lot of events do, I heavily focus on the attendees. I already know I know good people, okay? So I focus on the attendees. Do they compliment each other? Do they challenge each other? As long as they don't upset each other, then it's a good fit, okay? But if they're there for alternate reasons, then I get rid of them. And then knowing the crowd's good, knowing the problems I have, then I go and get the people. And I've had Jim Quick, Jay Abraham, I've had rock stars, athletes. I've had a whole bunch of people that have come in to literally, and I have people come up to me going, and it's daft because they come up and they go, Steve, he was like he was speaking to me because I have this problem. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I know. You told me 3 months ago.
And you told him. You've told Jay Abrams or whoever. So these people feel that they're getting this VIP, beautiful behind the scenes, velvet rope, glass door experience where it's all about them. And that's what it's all about. I just want to go back about, you know, 10 or 15 minutes because you've just dropped some amazing gold. And I just want to think about it because as a speaker, and you and I are both speakers, we both spook and around the world. How many times have you asked, you know, somebody who's running an event, what do you want people to get out of this event? What is the thing that you want people to leave here going, oh my God, I learned this and I'm so much better. And the event planner looks at you like they've got deer in headlights.
The good event, you're right.
Yeah. There's so many event planners that say, okay, you're right. We need to have a hotel. We need to have ballrooms. We need to have lights and studios and speakers and this, that, their thing. But they don't sit there and go, these people are coming here and they're giving us their money for a reason. They have problems. They have issues. They have things that are making them tear their hair out. How are we going to solve those problems better than another event? And I love the fact that when you went out and said, what's your problem? You really cared. You sit there and said, because it was a small event with a large impact, you were able to go up to 40 people, actually have a conversation with them ahead of time and really dive into say, okay, are these people going to get along with each other? Are they going to challenge each other? Are we going to be able to help each other? And you're right. You were able to get the people out of the room, hopefully, that, you know, were just there to sell everybody else. So I love the genesis of this. But now let's take this and let's throw another monkey wrench out of this. Let's call it COVID. We're sitting there going in the middle of a pandemic. People are scared. People don't want to travel. People don't want to be near each other. All these challenges going on. How do you sit there and say, okay, guys, we understand your fears, your wants, your desires, your hopes, your needs, your dreams, and we're still going to take care of you? And what are the added challenges that come along with having to create a world-class event, knowing all these things going on in the background?
Yeah, you have to be focused on the surroundings. For one thing, we control our environment. So none of the events that we have ever done, and we're on our ninth event now, we do three a year, we never do them in hotels and conference centers. So they're always in penthouses, private houses, lofts, kind of weird kind of locations, because that's a great genesis for creativity. And the whole point of anyone that comes to this event is that they're giving me permission to shake them up and then spit them out to be more impactful. So they want to be creatively disrupted. That's the whole point. But this one, we worked it. We did two during COVID. We did the recent one in Scottsdale, and we did one last August in Nashville. And they're both under 40. So at the time this was allowed, we were supposed to do it in California. In fact, the next one's in California, San Diego, the 19th and 20th of July. That was supposed to be in January, but we had to postpone it because you weren't allowed 40 people together. But what we did is, you got the obvious ones, face masks and hand sanitizer, but you're going to love the simplicity of the next thing that we did. We got three stickers. And as they attended the house, we took over this Tuscan mansion in Scottsdale. As they attended and walked into the house, they got these three stickers, red, amber, green. And they had to take one of the stickers that matched their comfort level. And so if it was red, 6 feet apart, face masks, don't touch, you know the scoop. Amber, only if you know each other, and the person that's wearing the amber has to initiate the handshake or something like that. Green, hey, you're fully comfortable, baps, slaps, hugs, anything goes. So we literally had the traffic light symbols as our color coordination. Now, we had a couple of people that were red, and we respected that. A couple of people that were amber, but most of our crew were green. But we had that little sticker system as our COVID awareness. We had the thermometers as well. But we have to make sure that you do pay attention to people's safety.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. And I think that's brilliant in its simplicity. I mean, it truly is. I mean, first of all, everybody's comfortable with the colors. Everybody knows the colors. You know, it's instant. Okay, green is go. Real simple as that. But what it does is it lets people know that everybody in the room understands the rules. These are the rules of the house. This is the game. This is how the game is going to be played. And we're in it together. We're all in it to win together. But we need that everybody in the room feels as comfortable as they need to be. And that's challenging. I mean, you could never do that with 5,000 people in COVID. You could never do it with 500 people in COVID because of all the restrictions. But the fact that you were able to sit there and say, okay, first of all, we're going to a bespoke location. We're going to somebody's home. We can make sure that it's properly cleaned before. We can make sure that we can take care of all these things. We can make sure that we have masks. We can make sure that we have enough room for everybody to be comfortable. But we also have this system that makes it fun. It takes something that's so serious and gives it a little levity to it. So that way, even people that are wearing the red stickers can have that level of comfort and say, I can come to one of Steve's events. I can be part of this but I know that I'm not going to get attacked in a way that's going to make me uncomfortable. So what brought that? I mean, that must have, was that just something that was just an epiphany? Was that something that you came up with? Was it something that, you know, one of your staff came up with? Was it something that one of the guests suggested? I mean, how do you come up with little things like that? Because that's what it is. It's the little things that make the difference.
See, the trouble is most people are too smart for their own good. We needed to make sure that this was COVID friendly for the event. So again, face masks, that's obvious. You know, it's the mount thermometer, you know, the temperature thing, that's standard. But how do we display to another person how comfortable they feel? Because sometimes you may feel a bit intimidated. If you've got a friend in front of you going, "Hey, how are you?" You may not want to go, "Hey, I'm a little bit concerned."
Whoa!
Yeah, you may feel a bit intimidated by going, "Ben, you know, I like you, but, you know, I'm not sure." So we thought, how can we actually make it visible without saying so? Quite simply, we were talking about this over curry at my local curry house, pulled out of the street, bang, what did I pull in front of the street? Traffic lights. There it was. Plain as day. There's the traffic lights. Everyone knows what they stand for. You don't even have to explain the things. Here's the color code picture, which one works for you. Everyone knows. So we try to keep, and it's funny, the most impactful things in the planet are the most simple. And people with their brain cells all climbing to come up to a decision usually end up overanalyzing, and then they do an analysis and a spreadsheet, and they oversmart the whole damn thing. And that's not what we do. We look, okay, what needs to happen? The simple, that lacks any confusion, is impossible to misunderstand. That's what impact is.
And at the same time, you're also giving people this amazing experience that they come back out of this thing going, as you said off air, you said this off air, you said, "I've ripped Steve off. I paid $2,000 to be part of this event. When's the next one?"
Yeah, I've had people do that. They've actually said, I've had people, and you know what it's like, Ben, because of a certain status, you don't have to pay to go to certain events. I had this girl that comes to my event that's very high profile, and she says to me, "I'll tell you this, in all of my years, I have never paid to attend an event. Never. I've always managed to get in somehow through a speaker, or something. Never had to pay for an event." She said, "This is my third speakeasy that you keep taking my money." And she said, "And I'm still ripping you off." So I really like that. And I think it's important that happens, because I'm a great believer, if they don't pay, they don't pay attention. If they've got money on the table, they demand to get the benefit from it. So when you actually give them more than what they expected and more than what they can actually utilize and impact, then they go away going, "Okay, that was brilliant." You see, here's the thing. If you walk around your house and you can look at things and I go, "How much is that sofa, Ben? How much is that TV, Ben? How much is that?" If you look at something and you can go, "Oh yeah, that's $2,000. If you can tell me the price of something after a year or two, that's because you never got the value out of it. And you're now looking at it going, "My God, why did I pay that?" And how many times do we do that? We look at something and go, "Oh, why did I buy that? That was $500. I shouldn't have bought that." But you look at something else you buy, like this water cup, and you use it so many times, you just physically don't know how much it costs because you've gone past the price tag and you're now focused on the value. That's where you need to be. And any event needs to have the attendees walking out of the room going, "I just screwed that guy over for that ticket price. I got a winner."
So when you're doing that, when you're curating, because not only are you bringing guests into events, but you're also bringing speakers. Now, a lot of these people are friends of yours. A lot of these people you know personally. But we've all been to events where you get somebody on stage and you thought, because of who they are, what they've written, you've seen them online, whatever, you're expecting them to be absolutely amazing speaker, and they turn out to just be a dud. They're great, you know, for insomniacs. How do you go about making sure that the people that you're bringing in are the people that are going to be impactful? Is it just because they're friends of yours and you know them and you've seen them on stage before? Or are there people that you bring in that you've actually never had them you know, actually speak at an event, but you've heard of them or you know them through other circles.
No, there's only been one person that is not a friend of mine. Every single person I had, Cameron Harold, I had Mark Victor Hansen, Sharon Lecter, Jason Campbell, Tucker Max, and Joel Weldon at the last one. I've had Ari Mizell, Jim Quick, Jay Abraham, and other ones. These are all friends of mine. I will interview them prior to the event and tell them what I need them to be focusing on to answer. Also, no one presents without a Q&A and interaction. So that's another thing. I've had a couple of my friends who are great on stage, and I've gone, hey, this is a group that's going to ask you questions. If you want to do a presentation before the Q&A, tell them at the beginning, or I'll tell them at the beginning. But if someone goes, well, hey, Jay, how do you do this? Be prepared to answer it. And I've had people, friends of mine, that are great presenters, great speakers, that have gone, I don't like that, or I don't want to do that, or I know I don't want to do Q&A. And I've gone, okay, great. I'm retracting my invite, okay? Because mine are very interactional. You've got to feel free, the audience. I want these experts and my attendees to have a conversation for an hour to get the problem out of the way. So not only have I interviewed the attendees, I'm also interviewing the teachers that are actually there. And there was one case, and they always say that experience comes 3 seconds after you needed it. There was one person, and I never work high on liability. So I would never bring someone in that I've never worked with before to be my main wow. But there was a little spot that I had. There was like a little 30-minute spot on media. And I got this person to come in because they'd been recommended to me by someone. An article had been summer. And basically, this person was dull. And I'm going to be quite vague here because I don't want to upset her.
No.
She was dull. Yeah.
Protect the innocent. Well, absolutely.
Exactly. What I really wanted was to get her media firm in, because her media firm had transformed this dullard into a person of interest. And I dragged as much of it as I could out of the conversation to make it interesting and beneficial to the crowd and the community. And they enjoyed it. And then killed the conversation, thanked them for coming, didn't put them up for Q&A, because quite simply, you could see they weren't there, and then finished them out. And when they left, I actually said to my team, we got it wrong there. We believed the hype. I trusted this person. I'm going to contact my friend and go, hey, you gave me a dead fish. And I'm going to do all of that. What do I do with my crowd? And one of my team said, well, they don't know. They enjoyed it. You asked good questions. You had a fireside chat. They weren't presenting, so there was no liability. You raised some good things that helped them. And I went, yeah, but I still think they need to know. And one of my team said, you don't have to do that, Steve. You know, they had a good time. And I went, no, they need to know everything. So when I went back up, I said, hey, that last one was a mistake. And I openly told them, this is what happened, this is what happened. And I give you my oath now, it'll never happen again. And it's never happened again. So there's only ever been one person that I've not been close to. And I'm not... There's a lot of people that bandy the word friend around, okay? But if you haven't been to someone's house and you haven't shared each other's food and drink and you haven't picked each other up from the gutter when you're bloody shit-faced drunk, they're not friends of yours. So everyone that ever comes to any one of my events is close, personal, and my attendees can see that from the interaction that we have. And then they adopt that interaction when they're communicating with it. So it's literally just like bringing a good close friend to a house party.
You just used a term that is just brilliant. It just struck me like a ton of bricks. It's a house party.
Yeah.
It is. It's a house party. You're sitting there going, okay, these are some of my friends. These are some of my acquaintances. I want to turn my acquaintances into my friends. So we're going to create the best house party we can. You're going to make it all about them. We're going to make sure that, you know, they leave here sitting there going, that was an incredible event. I'm so glad that I came. And it's a matter of putting the processes in place. And you're right. Most of us overthink these things. Most of us overthink of it. We have to have the perfect wine glasses. We have to have the china set out perfectly. Wines are we going to serve, etc. You know what? In the end, what matters is the experience. It's what's the experience that you can provide these people. I got one last question. I'm gonna switch directions a little bit, but I got one last question to go. It says, you have this great quote on one of your web pages. It says, getting media is one thing. What you do with it is everything. And I think everything that we've talked about to this point is summed up with that quote. I want to let you talk about it for a second.
There's far too many people today that know how to get the attention. Hey, you can get a post and you can boost the hell out of it and you can get a lot of attention, a lot of followers. Getting attention is not everything. Getting media is not everything. It's the second step that makes it everything. And there's a lot of people that will suddenly go out, they'll suddenly get an article in their local post, and they will literally just have the article drop and they'll sit back going like Field of Dreams. Okay, it's there. They will come now. And they will just suddenly like get their bank account open up, just waiting for it to suddenly start going ding, 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 ding. It doesn't happen. Getting media is not the third, fourth, fifth. It's actually the first step. In fact, I believe it's not even the first step. Okay? It's your toolkit. The first step is, how do you distribute the article you got? Who do you tell about the article you got? How do you leverage that article to another article? See, I did an article ages and ages and ages ago in my local gazette, okay? The paper was so freaking thin, you could probably use it as a toothpick. But I had an article in it. And what did I do with that article? I sent it to another magazine in my area, slightly more glossy. And I went, hey, I did an article over here, but I've got a different thing that we didn't really explore. Hey, if this is of interest to you, let me know. And I've got some fresh stuff for you. And they went, oh, okay, great. We'll take it. It was a little local rag. So, you know, they were happy. But this was now a magazine that looked nice, that was like a free magazine in the local hairdresser. I took that magazine and I now took it to the county press. And I went, oh, I saw this magazine. I forgot the Gazette. I saw this magazine wrote an article on me. There were a couple of things that they kind of like didn't go over. But if you want to do a bigger expose on how this is helping people, I'm available. Now, this is what happens. Today's media is lazy. They don't want to take the risk on exposing you. If someone else has done it, well, they must have done their due diligence. Okay, I'll take it. So as you start, what you're doing is you are leapfrogging up and down, up and down, up the ladder. Okay. And I took that article from the Gazette to the magazine, to the local press, to an AP syndicated press, and it finally got wrote up in the Worth magazine. Okay. So I took the same article, different kind of spin. Okay. And every third or fourth article, you could go back to the original one and start it again because to someone else is fresh. See, the bottom thing is, if you're trying to get people to know who you are and what you stand for, you first of all got to get your voice into the right sandpit. And when you get media, you've then got to make sure that people pay attention to it. So there's a lot of work necessary required once you get the article. Getting the article ain't going to get your bank account fat. What you do with that article is what's going to balloon it.
Well, and it's also the fact, and I love that story, but it's also the fact that so many people just want to say, okay, I need to get written up in Forbes or Inc. or Fortune magazine. And they put all their eggs into that one basket. And they realize why they get rejected over and over and over again. But if you're right, if you start small and you build advocates and you tell that story to a small audience, to a little larger audience, to a little larger audience, to a little larger audience, all of a sudden, the big magazines and the big newspapers start calling because all of a sudden you become a big person a little step at a time. And I think we all need to realize that success does not come overnight and does not come easy and does not come without, you know, the heartaches and the hassles that go with it. We all have to start where you did with 9 people at a speakeasy and building it up and building it out to a point where, hey, listen, I'm sure you could get 40 people tomorrow if you decide you were going to. You were just going to do another speakeasy that, you know, that you didn't even announce. You were just going to do one. I'm sure you could get 40 people to come to that tomorrow. But that takes time and that takes effort and that takes consistency of product And that's how you turn a small event into something with large impact. So, Steve, I love this conversation. I got one last question, and I asked you this before, and I'm going to ask you this again, because it's the thing that I ask everybody as they walk out the door. When you leave a meeting or you get off the stage and you get in your car or on your bike for your matter and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
He got me uncomfortable. That's what I want. I want people to meet me and get uncomfortable, because once you've got uncomfortable, you never go back to the original point of comfort. You actually extend what you're capable of doing. So you grow. It's that point of being uncomfortable where all that growth sits and suddenly kind of like explodes in you. So I want to get people uncomfortable.
I love it. You know, because there's too many people in the world that are just too comfortable doing what they've always done. And guess what? There's no room for growth if you're not willing to be uncomfortable. Steve, you've been a gentleman, you've been a scholar, and I loved having you on the show again. Thank you for your time, and thanks for being such a great guest.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?